Welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. Now let's begin.
Fellow podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I am your host. My name is Chris Lockhart. Joining me, as always, is my co-host in crime, Mr. Kevin Decent. How's it going, Kevin?
It's going well, Chris. You know, usually I'm the pretty one of the bunch here, but not tonight.
Yeah, definitely not tonight. It's been a while since I've been on the podcasting airwaves with her. I'm so happy she's here. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to welcome Miss M to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. Hello, Miss M.
Hello. I'm just thrilled. That was a great, that just made my night, Kevin.
For those that don't know, like, I used to do a few other podcasts before this one. Random Nerdness Podcast, Geek Fallout, and Miss M and Kevin were both guests on my various podcasts. But I was just trying to think. I was thinking earlier tonight. I think Miss M, it's been like 3 or 4 years since you and I have did a podcast together.
Yeah, it's been a very long time. I would probably say like 2015, maybe 2016. I mean, it's been a moment.
Yes, it has. You know, let's introduce you a little bit. Miss M, you're a blogger and you're an Instagram star. So tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
So my blog is called Diary of a Dorkette, and I am a huge toy collector, and I love to share toy memories and, you know, toy photos and what I'm collecting, and just kind of like really get to immerse myself with other collectors and just build, you know, friendships and great connections with people. And so I do that throughout, you know, social media. So I have a lot of fun with that.
Excellent. And you do a lot of, like, on Instagram, you do like storybook scenarios.
Yes.
Which are awesome.
Thank you for that. I have a long running toy soap opera called All My Toys, and it started on my blog, but now I've moved it to Instagram. And then I also, you know, there's this renaissance that's been going on for a number of years with, you know, 5.5 inch action figures, and Funko and Super 7 have kind of jumped into that market and really made some wonderful figures from various toy properties. And I've also kind of, in a way of showing tribute to that, have kind of created some sort of, you know, comic styled toy stories based off of those toys and kind of just the adventures I go on with them. And so I also share that with people on Instagram, you know, just to have fun and get people excited about buying toys, which, you know, nothing can be better than that.
Oh yeah. So, Miss M, where can people, like, at the end of the episode, we always do that, you know, play that game, where can we find you on the internet? But since this is your first episode with us, can you tell the listeners where to go to find your Instagram and your blog?
Sure. If you look up Instagram or look me up on Instagram, it's Diary of a Dorkette. And then the blog is diaryofadorkette.blogspot.com.
Excellent.
I've had it for 8 years, and I keep meaning to buy the name so I can just be Diary of a Dorkette, but I fail at doing that. So,
excellent.
That's toy money.
Yes, right?
Okay, so I have a question for you two. For our first-time listeners, I am from Canada, if you couldn't tell from my thick Canadian accent. But Miss M and Kevin are both from the great United States of America. So yesterday, I don't know if you guys saw this, I posted this on Instagram and Facebook, that I bought a magazine. And it's like, I think it's a People magazine. It's like one of them special magazines. And it's all about Aerosmith. All right?
Yeah, I did see that, yeah.
Yeah, I saw that too.
So the tagline for the magazine is Aerosmith, America's greatest rock band. So I want to ask you two, because you are Americans, do you think they are the greatest rock band in America?
Oh. It's such a loaded question.
Because I know, like, for me, they would be for me. Because my list goes, my favorite band is Queen, and then I would say AC/DC, then I would say the Tragically Hip. So right there you've got a British band, you've got an Australian band, you've got a Canadian band, and then my number four on my list would be Aerosmith, and then they, of course, are American. But I know a lot of people in the States are, like, huge, like, Bruce Springsteen fans. Like I know Bruce Springsteen is huge in the States. So, like, I'm just wondering.
But
like,
not a band.
Well, the Bruce Springsteen.
He has a band with him.
Yeah, the E Street Band. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm just curious, because I thought that title for that magazine was pretty bold for them to say that. Like, I love Aerosmith, don't get me wrong, but, you know, do Americans actually consider them the greatest American rock band?
I mean, I think some Americans probably do. I think the funny thing about music in this country is that, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of, like, favorite, best American, you know, blah, 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 you know, insert whatever. And I think a lot of times, you know, I mean, it's like everyone just loves so much stuff. And, you know, I mean, I don't know that they're like, you know, I don't know how accurate that magazine cover is. But, I mean, there are a lot of people that do love them and enjoy them, you know. I mean, they're not a bad band. I do like some of their songs. But, I mean, like, I don't know that I would personally agree with that. But, you know.
Oh, and I was also thinking it might be, like, where you're located, too. Because I imagine, like if you're from New Jersey, Bon Jovi would probably be, you know, your favorite band, right? Like, if you were from New Jersey.
Yeah.
So,
well,
I don't know.
Overall, I don't know who I would put in that place, if not Aerosmith, is a big thing. I don't have a better answer right now. Aerosmith being Boston originally, yeah, you have a big, you know, New England and whole East Coast thing.
Yep.
You have only one number one hit in their entire career.
Hmm.
But can you guess which one?
I'm going to say Janie's Got a Gun.
Nope.
Walk This Way.
Nope.
Hmm. Dream On.
Nope.
All right, it's not one of their newer ones, is it? Is it like Jane?
Nope.
Or I Don't Want to Miss a Thing, or one of those?
Yeah, it is. It is their Armageddon song.
Oh, that was pretty big. That's crazy to think that that's their only number one song. But it was pretty big.
Yeah, but you do have them being rock icons when they came out. Dream On is just an incredible song.
Oh yeah.
When he sang before he started, you know, screeching more, really.
Yeah.
They would have had more hits if not for Drugs. I think, like, yeah. Toys in the Attic was the last good album, and then the Drugs happened, and then out of nowhere, three kids from Hollis, Queens bring them back into the mainstream. And then they go on to, you know, the Alicia Silverstone era, which they still had great rock songs on all of those. And they are, every one of them's from America. You have songs that are great rock songs that, you know, people into rock and heavy metal and, you know, want to wear their denim and leather would love. But then you have the ballads that every girl can love and sing along with, and, you know, this is my song.
Yep.
You got songs that could work for weddings from them, and songs that could work as, you know, bar anthems from the same band. So, mm-hmm. like, the more, I mean, I'm going to be thinking about this all tomorrow, but I'll give them that little slug on the cover, because I can't think of a better one to put up there. You know, I'm like, ooh, about this band? Well, they're from England, so that doesn't count. Mm-hmm. Metallica doesn't have the crossover with the ballads and everything, you know?
Yeah, well, like, and also just, Metallica also kind of falls metal into metal. Work. Yeah, like, yeah, it's
yeah, you can't do, like, Motley Crue, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they have a great, I mean, there's no denying their catalog of music. Yeah, they do have a really great catalog of songs that have spanned, you know, multiple decades.
Yep.
And buying in Canada, Chris probably paid double cover price for that magazine than we
did. And those are already expensive. I mean, you know, when I go to the store and I see magazines like that, I'm like, oh, I want that. And then I'm like, oh, that price tag is really expensive for that magazine. So
Yeah. I think I paid $17 for it, which is crazy. But yeah. I am an Aerosmith fan, like I said. Like, you know, anytime I see Queen, Aerosmith, you know, one of them, I'm picking it up. I know I have an AC/DC one in my collection, so.
Is it folded or does it have a spine?
No, it's got a spine.
Okay, so a little better.
Yeah, no, yeah. And it's got, like, the hard, it's not a hard cover, but it's, like, the harder.
Cardstock.
Cardstock, yes. But excellent. I just wanted to ask you guys, since I had you on the line, and you are Americans, I just wanted to know if that was a true statement. Because I know in the last few years, up in Canada, the Tragically Hip has really become the Canada's favorite rock band. And it's crazy, because I remember, like, as a teenager, like, nobody listened to them except for, like, my friends and I. Like, my parents weren't listening to them. Like, but it just seemed like in the last, I don't know, 10 years or so, that the Tragically Hip became Canada's, you know, rock band. And unfortunately, I think a lot of that had to do with the lead singer. Unfortunately, he passed away. He had I think he had brain cancer. And he did a farewell tour that, like, it seemed like all my friends and my family were going to, except for me, because I just hate going to packed concerts. I can't stand going to them anymore. I'm getting too old and cranky. You know, I prefer to go to a bar and watch, like, a cover band do Tragically Hip songs than actually go to, you know, a hockey arena where there's, like, 20,000 people. You know, like, that's just too many people for me. I can't take it. But I can say I did go see them back in 1996. Aerosmith, unfortunately, is one of those bands I haven't got to see yet. I know they.
And if you hate being around people, I think they only do stadium tours now.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah.
They did do a stadium tour near me, I want to say about 4 or 5 years ago. And it was August, so it was in our football stadium. And I mean, it's nice and open, and there's a lot, you know, but there's too many people. Like, I don't even like going to football games anymore because I'm so sick of crowds and people pushing, and, you know, I'm just getting old. I'm old. I'm 40 now. But anyway, let's move on to our topic this evening. And the topic this evening is the top positive OMG moments in pop culture. And this is a two-part episode. Our next episode, we're going to talk about the top negative OMG moments in pop culture. Those moments that made us roll our eyes and say, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing this. This is not good. But this one's the good one. This is the positive one. These are the ones that made you gasp. These are the ones that made you cheer. These are the ones that maybe made you cringe, but in a good way, you know? So we will do that topic, our top positive OMG moments in pop culture, and then we'll go into our ender segment where we're going to discuss more current events. So I'll kick it off. I'll use the example that I sent Kevin and Miss M. And that is, and it's positive for the Star Wars sequel trilogy, because there's been a lot of negativity towards the sequel trilogy. But this is a positive one. And that is ex-Stormtrooper Finn picking up the lightsaber after Kylo Ren has, you know, knocked out Rey and hurt her. And he picks it up and he, you know, at that time we didn't know he was Force sensitive. We still don't know if he's Force sensitive. I know that's the rumor going around. Because apparently in Rise of Skywalker, that's what he was going to tell Rey, like when he kept saying, I got to tell you something, and then we never find out what he wanted to tell her. Apparently he was going to tell her that he was sensitive with the Force. But way back in, you know, The Force Awakens, we didn't know this. So we just saw Kylo Ren be you know, total jerk and, you know, knocked out Rey, hurt Rey. And then Finn picks up the lightsaber and ignites it. Just a normal dude at the time, had no Force powers or nothing. You know, just Stormtrooper training. And he fights Kylo Ren. Granted, he got beat up a little bit. You know, he got knocked out and was in a coma, you know, going into the next movie. But it was cool. It was cool to see just a regular dude pick up a lightsaber and just say, hey, I'm going for it, you know, and take on the big bad guy. You know, like, it was cool back in Empire Strikes Back seeing Han Solo pick up the lightsaber and, you know, cut open the, you know, the, whatchamacallit, the animal.
Tauntaun,
yeah. You know, to save Luke and himself. But, you know, typically we don't see normal people, regular people, you know, using lightsabers. So, you know, for me that was like a, you know, my jaw kind of hit the floor with that movie. I was like, wow, this is awesome. What did you guys think of that moment? Did it have the same effect on you at all?
I really enjoyed it. I mean, I thought, you know, there was so much tension that was built up to that moment where it was like, oh my gosh, what is going to happen? You know, I mean, there was just a lot that led up to that moment. And yep. So when he did that, it was just like, oh my gosh, this is really cool. And from like then on, that whole scene was just, I mean, it was just movie magic. I mean, I remember just sitting in the theater being enthralled, you know, I mean, I was just like, I was loving every moment of it.
And we did see him do that earlier in the film, like when he picks up the lightsaber and fights the Stormtrooper, right? Which mm-hmm. was cool. But to see him take on, like, a Force user was, you know, just wicked, I thought.
Yeah, I loved it. I was just, like, geeking out, you know? I was super, like, I was on the edge of my seat the whole time and just eating it up. It was a really great, a great scene.
Absolutely. Kevin, do you have, let's go with your first pick for top positive OMG moments.
Okay, hang on. I'm just going to give a little Star Wars there before going on to mine. I didn't think of it until that movie came out, but it's about, you know, someone not Force sensitive or Jedi or Sith using a lightsaber. Because it's not Mjolnir. It's not like that. Mm-hmm. But it did seem, you know, you bring up Han Solo. There's a difference between using it as a tool and as a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, I mean, most martial arts weapons come from farm implements originally. And that was how they trained. You know, that was what was nearby and useful to them, and they adapted it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's, you know, we've all taken a broom and actually used it for sweeping, but then twirled it around too.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a difference between doing that and using it as an actual broom. And being skilled to use a bow staff. There's a big difference between the two. So Han using it to cut open Tauntaun, Finn picking it up. Like, there's a difference between just using it and actually using it for battle. And I never thought of it until, you know, Force Awakens first came out. I'm like, Wait, he picked that up. Is he supposed? Is he Vision? How can he pick this up? What's he doing? And, you know, it was tough to wrap my head around. And then, you know, we got the stuff later on. But it really, I was shocked by it. And I never realized how the pedestal I put lightsabers on like that. That not just anyone can do it. All right, so Chris, I have a pick.
Okay.
And it's going to shock you.
All right.
Because I'm picking something from Star Trek.
Excellent. Excellent.
Now, I don't know if you've seen it or not.
I may have. I may have.
Once or twice, maybe. But because I was going with OMG moments in our chat beforehand and everything, I was thinking of stuff like, I don't want to pick obvious ones or ones we saw in the trailer or, you know, like Luke, I am your father. Just we all know it. I want like the what, you know, like you're just shocked and you pause and you're staring and you can't believe you didn't see it coming, but it was obvious, but it wasn't, you know, like a whole brain pause of like, wait, what's happening? I can't believe this. So I'm going with Star Trek the Motion Picture when it's been there the whole time, what Viger is.
Oh, Voyager. Yeah.
Yes. Blew my mind because like I've always loved NASA and space exploration when there's articles up of like we found an Earth-sized planet and this is how we think black holes might work and here's the super fast radio burst things that there's an article I was reading earlier today. Like I love that stuff. I just think it's fascinating. I'm not understanding it all, but I try. So I remember articles of like Voyager's going to be the first thing to leave the solar system.
Yep.
And then the, what's it called? The heliosphere, something like that, which is like all the charged particles and the sunlight and everything that goes beyond the solar system and all that stuff and how many years it's going to take for it.
Yep.
Well, sure enough, there's Star Trek many, many years in the future. And it, like, no, it doesn't make sense. It made sense in the movie. I was just blown away by it. I'm like, it's Voyager. It's Voyager. That's a thing that exists. That's real. And I never saw it coming in front of me the whole time. Brilliant. I loved that. And I mean, I probably first saw it on cable one random day. You know, like probably when Next Generation was on. I thought, oh, I should go back and watch the original ones. And it was on, you know, random cable channel or Saturday movie, you know, something like that. Never saw it coming. And I know at the age I saw it, everyone else knew. But it was new to me. And I still remember the joy of it.
No, that's a really cool pick. Like, I remember when seeing that movie as well and that whole thing. And that ignited an interest in NASA for me. Like, I actually went and researched the Voyager, you know, probes. Unfortunately, I think there's only two of them. Whereas in this movie, I think that was Voyager 7, I want to say. So, I mean, maybe at the time they were planning on launching all these Voyagers, and then something changed, and they focused, you know, their attentions on other things. But it is cool. Like, every time I see, you know, like Voyager 2 or whatever, like, now that it's left our solar system, you know, it has all the, you know, whenever that, you know, you get the news about some, you know, they've reactivated it or whatever. I always think of Star Trek, the motion picture. But, yeah, excellent choice. That's awesome.
I thought it'd surprise you.
Excellent. I may have a Star Trek 1 or 2 as well. So
I should put money down on it. Just to jump ahead for a second, because I know you're about to throw it to Miss M.
Yeah.
It's weird to say that, because for years, going back to the League, and, you know, when all of us bloggers kind of started getting in contact with each other.
Yep.
If I refer to her at home, I say Doorcat.
Yeah.
And that's my shorthand at home. I was like, oh, did you see this post? Or, you know, whatever it might be.
I love it. And that is a good pick. I I'm kind of a bad dorkette right now because I've not seen the original Star Trek movies, but like a year or two ago, I binged watched The Next Generation and saw all of those movies probably like a year ago. And so I need to catch up on my Star Trek stuff because I'm a little all over the place.
Well, I will say, Miss M, that the original Star Trek movies, with the exception of, I want to say, Star Trek V, are actually better than the TNG movies. Like, to be honest with you, yeah. I prefer the original series movies over the TNG ones.
Okay. I feel like, I mean, having not seen them, I don't know how accurate this will be, but I feel like they maybe put a little more studio magic and razzle-dazzle in the original ones than the Next Generation, at least from what I've seen from, like, you know, watching the trailers online or just to kind of go back and see, like, well, what was this all kind of about? You know, it just seems like, I don't know, just there seems to be a little bit of a difference in, you know, just sort of the makeup of those movies versus the Next Generation movies.
Absolutely. Yep. But Miss M, what's your first on your list?
Okay, so first on my list popped in my brain really quickly when I heard about what this topic was going to be, and that was comes from X-Men Gold, and in the issue, well, the issues were all building up to the wedding of Colossus and Kitty Pryde, and I absolutely adore a comic book wedding. I never tire of that. And this one threw me for a loop because Kitty Pryde decided not to marry Colossus. And instead, Rogue and Gambit decided to use that time them to tie the knot.
Yep.
And I was an emotional wreck. I was crying because, you know, Rogue is one of my favorite characters. I really relate to that character a lot. And knowing the sort of ups and downs and twists and turns that the relationship she's had with Gambit since like the 90s, you know, and I've followed it, you know, since then. And I've always wanted them to have, you know, that kind of moment together. It was just beautifully done. I was not expecting it, totally thrown for a loop and just really moved by, I mean, I just remember just, it was like and I can't recall who was writing that issue at the time. Which I should have done my research better, but anyways, it just was written so well, and the history that they had and, you know, everything that led up to them being in that moment, it was perfect. It was just absolutely everything you could want out of an X-Men comic. And, that was definitely easily my top pick for this topic.
Excellent. Yeah, I love those, like, when they did the X-Men Gold and X-Men Blue comics. Just, I mean, that wasn't that long ago. Like, I want to say that issue was, like, maybe a year or two. No, must have been 2 years ago.
Two or three. I'm trying to think how many, you know, big crossovers there's been and who's redoing it all right now. Hickman, I think.
Yeah, Hickman's doing it now.
But, yeah, like, I was really hoping that Kitty and Colossus would finally tie the knot. But, yeah, it was cool to see Rogue and Gambit.
It was a great swerve.
It was definitely a nice switcheroo.
Yeah, not expect, you know, usually you can kind of tell or something is leaked. And I guess I read that issue in just enough time to where nothing was spoiled for me and I was completely you know, just thrown for a loop with that one in the best way.
Excellent.
I mean, if there was like an X-Men TV show, like it'd have to be Game of Thrones level, and that scene happened, that'd be all everyone's talking about the next day.
I mean, it was just a huge, like, I don't get many moments like that in reading comics. And so to have that moment, I was like, oh my gosh, this is why this is why people read comics, because this kind of moment is just, you know, it was just fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
So, side note.
There's
a comic came out within the last week or two. I think it's called Avengers of the Wasteland. And it's an Avengers team in the Old Man Logan world.
Oh.
So this girl comes into the scene and it's obvious it's Rogue's daughter. Like, you know, looks like her, has the skunk streak, you know, all that mm-hmm. stuff. And one of the other characters smiles and she's like, "What's so funny?" He goes, "You have your father's eyes," and then the Logan is that red and black.
Oh.
And it was just, oh. It's a tiny, overall unimportant scene in the book, but it was just so well done.
Yeah. I may have to check that one out. I haven't, because normally I just stick with my X-Men titles, but I may have to look into that one.
I mean, honestly, just for, like, you know, in a couple months when it's dollar bin stuff, because most comics are very yeah. quickly now.
Yeah, that is true.
All right, so for my second pick, I'm just trying to decide what to go with here. I'm going to go with the final fight in the movie Lethal Weapon 4, when Riggs and Murtaugh fight Jet Li. And I've said this before, I think this is like one of the best fight scenes in any movie. Because I think that was like one of Jet Li's first movies in North America was Lethal Weapon 4. And in this movie, you know, he's a badass, he's killing people, he's, you know, got the, you know, kung fu down, you know. Riggs and Murtaugh are just two older guys, you know, cops, you know, they box a little bit. And them having to fight this, like, kung fu master was awesome. Like, it was such an awesome fight scene. And the fact that, you know, this little, you know, because he's a lot smaller than Mel, Jet Li's a lot smaller than Mel Neither Gibson. Yeah, and Danny Glover. And he's just kicking their ass. And then they have to start fighting dirty. You know, like, in one shot, you see Riggs, you know, is basically eye gouging Jet Li while Jet Li's choking him, because that's all he can do. And then, you know, Murtaugh gets him with the piece of rebar, which is, you know, just makes me cringe every time I see that. Such a good fight scene. Such well choreographed. You know, like, and it's funny because at the end of the movie you see, you know, like, Riggs and Murtaugh, you know, like, they're in casts, they're, you know, using crutches. Like, they literally got the shit kicked out of them. It was such a good fight scene. And really, I think, introduced Jet Li to the North American audience in a big way. And I'm, you know, at the time of this recording, you know, fingers crossed, you know, they're talking about doing a Lethal Weapon 5 with Mel Gibson and Danny Glover. Which I'm kind of, I don't know. And they're talking about doing an Indiana Jones 5 too. So I'm like, do I really want to see, you know, senior citizens in an action movie? I don't know, but at the same time, I can't not see it. So, but anyway, for this list, Lethal Weapon 4, Riggs and Murtaugh fighting Jet Li, you know, check it out on YouTube. It's a cool fight scene.
Yeah, I enjoyed those movies a lot, and that was a really great fight scene. It
yeah.
was a really, really good one.
And an honorable mention would be when Riggs fights, what's his name, at the end of the first Lethal Weapon movie.
When they fight,
when they fight on the front lawn, Mr. Joshua.
Yes.
What's that actor's name again? Gary Busey.
Yeah.
That was an awesome fight scene, too.
Yeah.
But I love the Jet Li stuff. But, Kev, I'll throw it over to you. What's number two for you?
All right. So, I cannot remember exactly what episode and season. And I knew earlier today, but it's gone. There's a Doctor Who episode, part of the new, you know, group of Eccleston to Tennant to Smith and so on.
Yep.
And which companion was it? Later companion as well. That overall doesn't matter. All hope seems lost. It's the first part of the two-part end of the season, and you're like, there's no way. There's no way. Someone's going to die. Someone's getting written off. And when we watched it, then we were trying to stay spoiler-free and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, there's no one left. There's no one left to help them. Nothing's going to work. Nothing's going right. They're probably going to have to kill people off and then a regeneration or someone new or whatever. I don't know. And out of nowhere, someone just shows up, all timey-wimey, portal, whatever. And it's Rose, Billy Piper, with just leather and guns everywhere, ready to save the day. And that was the end of the episode. And I'm watching it with my wife. And, you know, I'm not one of those guys that's like, oh, honey, look at her, isn't she hot? Look at that girl's butt, you know, like all that crap. I don't do that at all. Does this scene happen? I pause, I go, I'm sorry. But that's one of the hottest, most amazing things I've ever seen. Or just showing up decked out, ready to kick ass like that. And I was like, I can't argue with you. That was amazing. I didn't get any trouble. But it was just like jaw-dropping, shocking. Not a show that really does that for a dramatic, like, action debut moment scene. You know, Doctor was usually more mental with everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I just lost my freaking mind on it.
And that
I wish, like, earlier today I could have remembered more details. It's just gone right now.
No, that's fine. That's David Tennant, right? And that would have been the...
I'm almost positive it was during Tennant's
time. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, if it was Rose, it would have been Tennant. And I think it was... True. And I think, like, you... It was towards the end of his run. I think it was series 4, I want to say.
Yeah, because she was gone already.
Yeah, she had been gone for a couple of years at that point. So, like, the fact that she came back was, like, shocking. It was like, holy shit. Where'd she come from? This is awesome. Like,
yeah.
I totally know what you're talking about. Like, yeah. That was fantastic. Because then it was her. And then the next episode was a bunch of other companions, right? Like, Captain Jack was there.
It was almost like, yeah, like she led the charge, but yeah. With the way Doctor Who goes, it's certain, you know, a new showrunner takes over, new head writer, whatever, and they say, okay, we're not touching anything that anyone did before.
Yeah.
Bigger concepts, we might bring back the Master, the Dalek, something like that, like a big bad guy, but they don't bring back companions, they don't bring back friends, mm-hmm. actors that have been on previously, none of it. They're like, no, we're continuing on this new path. So to have something come back was like, oh, that's a rule you don't break, and you broke it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what's happening, and I'm excited.
Excellent. Excellent choice, my friend. Miss M, number two on your list.
So number two on my list was, this was another kind of no-brainer one for me, and it is when... In the Wonder Woman movie, when Wonder Woman walks across no man's land, and at least I think that's what it's called. My brain is escaping me, but that whole scene from when she, you know, is like, she knows that she's got to do the right thing, and she just kind of puts that tiara on and then climbs up that ladder and just walks across that battlefield. I've seen that movie more times than I care to admit, and I get so emotional every time I see it. It was such a big deal for me in the movie theater. And I mean, the trailer and, you know, all the various trailers that came out, you know, you definitely could see that something happens on a battlefield. So it wasn't like this was going to be a total shock, but I did not realize, I mean, it just affected me so greatly because, yes, there's been all kinds of movies before Wonder Woman with strong women in roles where they're kicking butt and doing mm-hmm. all this stuff. But there was just something that felt very different this go around. And it just really, I mean, I was beyond moved. And it was shot beautifully. You know, it was just a really great movie moment that, you know, I freak out and get gaga over it every time that it happens when I see it.
Excellent. Well, Gal Gadot is just amazing. Like, like, honestly, you know, originally she wasn't who I had envisioned as Wonder Woman, but now that she's played that part, I can't imagine anyone else doing it.
Oh, I know. I know. I absolutely agree.
Like, to me, it's kind of like Chris Evans. Like, when I heard that Chris Evans was going to be the new Cap, I'm like, really? The Human Torch from the Fantastic Four movies? That's your choice to be Cap? And that now it's like, I can't imagine anyone else. Well, I know, you know, the Falcon's going to become the new Captain. I know that. But I couldn't imagine anyone else playing Steve Rogers. Like, he owns that role. And same with Gal Gadot. Like, for Wonder Woman, like, she's just amazing.
Yeah, she really does an incredible job in that role. I knew her previously from, like, a Fast and Furious movie. Mm. And I was just kind of like, oh, that's an interesting choice to play Wonder Woman, you know. But then seeing the trailer and just seeing her on, you know, all the publicity stuff. Well, even before the trailer, when she was in Batman versus Superman. Mm-hmm. Or Superman versus Batman, whatever that one was called.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, holy cow, this is amazing. Like, this is really great. I'm totally on board. There's no doubt in my mind that, you know, this is the Wonder Woman we've been waiting for, you know?
Excellent. All right. Well, let's go around one more time. We'll do our number threes. And then after that, we'll do honorable mentions. We'll do more of a lightning round for because I have a list here, so I have a bunch of others. So I'm going to go with my top three for my three, and then I'll do honorable mentions. So the last on my list is, without a doubt, The Best of Both Worlds Part 1. The Star Trek Next Generation Season 3 finale, which was also a cliffhanger, which had never been done on Star Trek before, that it ended with a cliffhanger. And this one was just jaw-dropping. Like, I remember watching the episode, you know, for those who don't know, like, I suggest you go watch it. It's one of the best Star Trek episodes ever made. You know, Riker may or may not be leaving the Enterprise. The Borg invade the Federation. They kidnap Captain Picard, you know, and then the ending shot is shocking, you know, because the Enterprise, they have a way of destroying the Borg ship, but by doing so, they'll also be destroyed. The Borg kidnap Captain Picard, turn him into Locutus, which is basically, you know, basically he's like a puppet for the Borg now. He's like the face and the voice of the Borg. While they invade the Federation. And you see the episode end with Picard, you know, talking to his crew as Locutus on the Borg ship, basically saying, you know, you will all be assimilated. Resistance is futile. Your life as it has been is over. From this time forward, you will service us. And then, you know, the crew's all shocked, and then Riker gives the order to fire. And then, you know, then the screen goes black. It says to be continued. And it, you know, it does the, you know, the dun 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 dun, you know, like this amazing score. And then that's the end of the episode. And I remember watching it for the first time and my jaw being on the floor. I'm like, well, they can't end it like this. Well, you know, like, so the next week, for whatever reason, like back in the day, like TV Guide, I guess, didn't get the memo that this was a cliffhanger and that was actually the season finale. Because because I remember watching it at, I think the first time I watched it was at my aunt's. And she had TV Guide. So I immediately ran to her TV Guide and grabbed it. And it said part two was next week. So, okay, awesome. So I go back a week later and it's a rerun. And I'm like, what the hell is this? Like, you know, when's the new episode? And then I found out that this was a cliffhanger. And I remember just being so, you know, shell-shocked. Like, how am I going to, you know, like, the new season's not back for 3 months. What am I going to do? Like, how is this going to be resolved? Like, does Captain Picard die? Is the Enterprise destroyed? you know, what is going on? Because, I mean, you know, leading up to this, there were rumors that Patrick Stewart wanted to leave the show. So are they killing him off? Like, you know, like, what's going to happen? Is Riker going to be the new captain? Is, you know, this Commander Shelby, is she going to be the first officer now? Like, what's going on? And, yeah, it was a long summer. It was absolutely a long summer. And I remember, you know, just a few years ago watching the Next Generation Blu-rays, like they did the special features on there. And Patrick Stewart actually commented on this. Like, he was living in L.A., and he was at this stoplight. And this family, you know, this sedan or whatever, pulled up beside his car. And they were looking at him, because they obviously recognized him. So he thought, oh, okay, you know, they're fans, you know. So, you know, he unrolled his, the guy unrolled his window and kind of motioned at him to unroll his window as well. So he did. And, you know, he was expecting, you know, like, oh, hi, you know, how's it going, something like that. And all the guy said, he yelled at him, and he said, you've ruined our summer. And then he drove away. And he was, like, in shock. He's like, oh. But yeah, like it like easily the best cliffhanger Star Trek's ever done. It's right up there with, you know, who shot JR, in my opinion, you know, because, you know, when JR got shot on Dallas, you didn't know if he was going to live or die. You didn't know who did it. This was very much like that. You know, you didn't know who was going to live or die, didn't know what the consequences were going to be. And part two was amazing. It was an excellent cliffhanger. And the interesting thing to note is the writers didn't even know. Like Michael Piller, who was one of the executive producers of TNG, wrote this episode without actually thinking about how he was going to conclude it. Like, he actually wrote it, they filmed it, they went on holidays, and then he came back and was like, oh, shit, how am I going to get out of this? Because I think in the back of his mind, because he, like, one of the subplots of the episode is Riker thinking about moving on. Like, he, you know, why am I still here? What am I doing? You know, should I accept a promotion? Like, why am I still here? Apparently, Michael Piller was going through the same thing. Like, he was been offered another job, and he was seriously thinking about quitting Star Trek. So that's why he didn't really give it a lot of thought on how he was going to conclude it, because he was like, well, I might not be back anyway, so, you know, it's someone else's problem. But then it became his problem when he actually did come back. But yeah, what a cliffhanger. So that's why it's number three on my list.
That is a good one. That was when I was binging these. And you know, I mean, I collected the toys when the show originally came out by mm-hmm. Playmates. So I knew, you know, I knew of the lore of, you know, what happens to Picard. But watching it, I still wasn't prepared for that season finale. Like, I was not prepared for it. And I, you know, you talking about, like, what were you going to do over the summer? You know, I watched it and I was like, thank God I'm watching this on Netflix and I can just watch the next episode, because I don't know that I would have handled, you know, the whole summer to wait to find out what happened next. Because it was, I mean, it was just great. That was great television. Like, well, no doubt about it. That was amazing television.
Yeah, and it was a long summer. And I remember, like, when part two came out, like, I remember, like, I was with my parents. We had to go to town for something. We had to do shopping or something. And we were running late. And I'm like, we got to get home by 7. And we didn't. I only watched, like, literally when we got in there, got home, like, I ran into the house, turned on the TV, and it was the battle of, in the second part, like when the Enterprise, you know, when they separate and there's two Enterprises and they're fighting the Borg and they're saving Picard. Like that was my first, like, that was the first thing I saw from part two. And I was just blown away. And then I had to wait until it came back, you know, like 9 weeks later to watch the whole episode. Right. Cause back in those days, you know, cause I didn't get back in time. I didn't record it. So I had to wait like 9 weeks to watch that again, to watch the episode, wow, so I could catch the beginning. But yeah, we're definitely spoiled now with Netflix. Like, you know, it's amazing. Yes. It's amazing what we can watch. But yeah, that was such a long summer. But yeah, that was my pick. Kev, number three on your list, sir.
Okay. I kind of want to watch the Star Trek one. Gotta see if it's still on Netflix or anything.
I know it's on Netflix Canada.
All right. I'll take a look. So I have an, oh my God, that actually, like, is the reason I'm talking to the two of you tonight. Really. If I want to, you know, get into the history of it.
Hmm.
Myself, group of friends, we all went to a movie. I don't even remember what movie it was. Doesn't really matter. Kind of think it was the first Michael Bay Transformers, but I'm really not sure.
Hmm.
And we're just sitting there, and a trailer comes up for movie. It's people hanging out at a party, and it's being filmed on a camera, you know, like a handheld camera. And it just looks like silly, you know, we're going to party and someone's going to fall in love and there'll be hijinks kind of movie. And then there's an explosion in the background and they rush to see it and you hear something and the ground shakes and camera gets all crazy. And next thing you know, the Statue of Liberty's head comes rolling down the street. And all it gives is a date. I wanted to go home to find out more about this. That was the first Cloverfield trailer before mm-hmm. anyone knew what it was, before it had a name. It had nothing. And it was an internet rabbit hole. You had to search. You had to go on message boards. You had to find random links from Japan. There were people doing manipulations with photos, with stills, with background shots from the trailer, everything, just trying to find out something more. And I do not remember what movie I saw because all I wanted to do was see that trailer again. It was the most amazing thing I had seen. I was so curious about it. I debated. Remember when people went and bought tickets to a movie just to see the episode one trailer and then left?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what I wanted to do again, just to see that trailer. So I started researching that. I'm like, I want to know more. And then I thought, well, I found this, and I found this. I don't know if anyone else has found it. I wonder if I put those two together, I could have that information out there for other people to find, too. I could be helpful. Oh, I got some hits. Oh, I got more hits. Oh, maybe I should write my own stuff, too. And that trailer is the whole reason I started blogging.
Hmm.
Because I was like, oh, I found information. Let me share it with people who, much like me, are looking for information. Maybe I'm not the first, but maybe it's easier for me to, you know, for someone to go to my site as opposed to something else through a paywall or in Japanese or, you know, maybe I have, you know, part A from this site and part B from another site, and I'll just have them both on my, you know, like whatever it might be. But I was getting like hundreds, if not thousands, of hits every day for it because everyone was looking for it. Everyone wanted more information. And then I was like, oh, screw it. You know, I'll talk about my stuff. I'll review comics and movies and talk wrestling and, you know, whatever else came up over the years. But it all goes back to, oh my God, what is this movie trailer?
Oh, I love that. I think that is so awesome.
Yeah, that's very cool. I got to ask you, Kev, with Cloverfield, what are your thoughts? Because one of the rumors was that this takes place in the Lost world.
Yeah.
Do you subscribe to that? Because they showed the Dharma Initiative logo or whatever. At the end of one of those trailers. Or at the beginning of the movie, I believe, also.
Yeah. And there's scenes, like, because, I mean, I've dove down on it and rewatched it and looked for other things and all. So, I do not think it's part of the same world. Because even if we go with the ending of Lost, they weren't in our world. Really. Because they were in, you know, Purgatory Limbo. whatever.
Well, what the island was real, though. Like, what happened on the island happened. That was a real world. The purgatory, like, was after. We have to do a lost episode.
I would say
because I know I've explained this a bunch, but yeah,
the logo is a fun little Easter egg, mm-hmm. and that's all I think it is. Because, and maybe this will get on your bad side here for a moment, to think that it was on purpose set up to be in the same world implies that thought was put into how are we going to end Lost and make this all make sense.
Yeah. See, I always had my fingers crossed that this was going to be a backdoor way of getting a Lost movie, right? But, honestly, yeah.
Quick side question, okay? And this can be something future, but just while I got in my head, quick side question. From opening episode or even opening season to how it fizzled out at the end, which is the worst offender, Lost or Heroes?
Heroes, definitely. Because, excuse me. To be honest with you, I'm one of the guys that defends Lost. I loved it. I like the whole time travel thing in season 5, and then season 6 with the smoke monster. Like I loved every minute of it. I really thought it was fantastic. And that's why I would love to do a Lost episode, because I think a lot of people didn't get it, you know, like towards the end. But you know, like I said, one of the things that I measure, like if something's good or not, is how it affects me emotionally. And that finale of Lost, honestly, like I was cheering, I was crying, like I was just a mess. And to me, that was the mark of a great finale, you know. But Heroes, oh man, it like that first, it started fizzling out right at the season finale, like of season 1.
Yeah, true.
Like when Siler and Peter finally meet, and you're expecting this big battle, and it lasts like a minute, you know. And Heroes was a show that had such great potential, and they just unfortunately squandered it. But excellent choice though with Cloverfield, and that's awesome that it also ties into how you got into blogging, which of course led to us meeting and podcasting. So that's really cool that it all ties into that film. That's really cool. But all right, Miss M, number 3 on your list.
Okay, so my final one, or my number 3, rather, it's in the scary movie world, Jason Goes to Hell, the very end. I remember, you know, growing up, I was like, I loved the slasher, you know, the big old slasher movies from the 80s, even the not so big ones. Like I wanted to consume as much slasher movie stuff that I possibly could. And so when Jason Goes to Hell came out, you know, I mean, it's not my most favorite Friday the 13th movie, but that final ending, that final glimpse of the mask and then Freddy Krueger's glove coming up, like my mind was blown. I was like, what does this mean? What is going on? Like, what in the world is this? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there were so many rumors and so many, you know, oh, this, you know, there's going to be a Freddy versus Jason movie. And I remember just anticipating, like, when is it going to come out? And I mean, the movie was Freddy versus Jason. I mean, there's some things that are good about it, and there's some things that are kind of like, you know, not so good about it. But that ending of Jason Goes to Hell was just one of those, like, I mean, I was in the cafeteria with my friends in school just talking like, oh my gosh, you guys, what do y'all think of this? Like, what, you know, what do we do? You know, like, what does this mean? You know, I mean, it was just one of those pop culture moments that, you know, there wasn't the internet, so you didn't mm-hmm. really know what any of that meant, but it was just so exciting and thrilling to know that those two crazed, you know, maniacs were somehow connected to each other.
Excellent.
But as soon as you said the movie, I knew what you meant. Like, God, that's such a, what a great pick. And, yeah. And right, that's not a good movie.
No.
Even if you just want to do, hey, I just want to watch the slasher movies for fun. I'm not expecting, you know, Oscar performances here. It's still not even a good movie, going in with lower expectations.
It's hard to get through.
Oh, it's awful. I remember watching it on cable with a friend. I'm like, this is bad. It's not even scary. Like, I'm almost embarrassed. Like, this is bad. But, you know, we had to finish the movie.
Yeah.
And we, even on cable, because pre-internet, we didn't know the ending was coming.
Yeah.
So the ending comes and lost our mind. I think we actually, like, went out to the video store to see, because, you know, we're watching this one on cable, and we're like, did we miss something? Did something come out later? And to piggyback, similar thing, Predator with the alien skull in the background.
Yeah.
And that was, what, a good decade before Aliens vs. Predator movie came out? I mean, the comics did it for a while and still do it to this day.
Yeah.
But that was such a very similar, like, oh my God, can they cross over? Can they do that? Are you allowed to do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think that was added as an afterthought? Because like you guys were saying, like, it was a bad movie, right? So was this a way of creating buzz to get people to actually go to the movie to see that, like, one quick scene or shot or whatever?
You know, and maybe, unless I've seen it more recently than I have, because I'm kind of, you know, I've seen it more than the one time, like, it's been a while. Mm-hmm. There really does seem to be a camera edit in there of, like, you know, they didn't film the scene and then continued with the glove. Well, it really seems like a hard edit and then that scene. So I wonder if it was tacked on.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if, like, they, you know, like, they did a test screening and everyone was like, this is awful. Like, you're not going to get anyone coming to the theater for this. And then they're like, well, what if we add this on? And then people are going to come, you know, like, it's a bad movie, but they'll come just to see that part, just to create the buzz.
I don't know if I'm, like, making this up in my memory or if this was something that I actually read, but I want to say, because, you know, Jason Goes to Hell came out towards the end of that heyday of just, you know, all these slasher films.
Yeah.
I want to say they did have this kind of idea or hope that there would be something to mm-hmm. continue on. But I don't know if it didn't maybe give up enough buzz or what happened. I feel like there is a story to all of that. I just can't recall what the actual story was about it.
No, that's fine. I'm just wondering if maybe that was it. Yeah, like, I can't remember either. But I do remember people talking about, you know, like, the movie was bad, but, you know, you got to watch it for the end. All right, well, let's go around the room, and let's just list off our honorable mentions. So we can talk about, you know, a little bit about them if you want. All right, so on my honorable mentions, Miss M brought up X-Men Gold. So it got me thinking about comic books. I honestly didn't even think about comic books for some reason, but this is one that really shocked me. And that's when Glenn is killed in The Walking Dead. Issue 100? Yeah.
Yep.
And I remember, you know, like, I remember there was a bunch of buzz, you know, and I remember this is back when I used to do the mail order comic thing where they would send me, like, a box of comics every month in the mail. And so I had to wait. So I made sure to, you know, stay away from the spoilers and all that stuff. And as soon as issue 100 showed up, it was the first book I read. And I remember just being floored. I was like, oh my God, you know, like, this is horrible. And it was one of those things that really, it shook me. This should almost be in the next episode, top negative OMG moments, because it was a bad, it was terrible, like what they did, but it was terrible in a good way. Like it really shook me in a good way. It should have actually been on our next episode, but I just, it made me think, like, that, like in comic books, like that was, you know, that shook me. And then they later filmed it for the actual TV show, and it was pretty, pretty bang on with what they did in the comic book.
Yeah.
I've mentioned this before several times on this podcast, and that's when Cap picked up Thor's hammer in Endgame. Like I said, there's so much going on in that movie, you know, like when Thor brings the hammer back with him, I should have realized what was happening. Right. Because again, going back to Ragnarok, like when they destroyed the hammer and it didn't come back, I remember like my thought coming out of that movie was, well, now we're never going to see Cap pick it up, you know, because that's a big moment in the comic books. Yeah. And it's something they hinted at in Age of Ultron, the movie, and Cap, you know, he nudged it. And even then, I remember thinking to myself, he could lift it. He just didn't. Like, he didn't want to take it away from Thor. And then, you know, in the Endgame, there's so much going on. Thor brings the hammer back with him. I didn't even think about it being a thing until, you know, when you see Thanos, like, just, you know, trying to kill Thor with Stormbreaker, and then you see the hammer lifting off the ground, and I'm like, I knew what was happening. I was like, oh my God, this is it. And then, yeah, the Thor, you know, the hammer hits Thanos, and then it comes back and Cap catches it. I was like, I remember the theater, like, everyone was cheering, and I remember, like, my mouth was wide open. I was just in awe. Like, that was an oh my God moment. You know, easily my favorite moment out of Endgame. Like, I was in shock. So that is on my list. It actually would have been one of my main ones, but because I've talked about it in a previous episode, I didn't make it one of my main ones. And then last but not least, getting back to the original Star Trek movies, Star Trek 3, the scene where Kirk and the guys steal the Enterprise because they want to go, like, you know, like the... I don't want to ruin it for you, Miss M. But I'm sure you know that Spock dies, right?
Yes.
So Star Trek 3, they find out that, you know, Spock's soul is trapped inside Dr. McCoy, and you know, they got to go back to the Genesis planet to get Spock, because that's where they left him. And Starfleet says, "No, you are not allowed. We're the Enterprise is being decommissioned. You know, you're not allowed to go back there." And Kirk and Scotty and Chekov and Sulu and Dr. McCoy steal the Enterprise, and they have to get it out of space dock and then get away from the USS Excelsior. It's such an awesome scene. Like, I just love it. I love the, you know, them backing the ship out of space dock and. You know, can they even get the doors open from space dock? You know, and then there's like it, because they're backing the ship up, and the doors for space dock are still closed. And you know, Admiral Kirk tells Scotty, you know, okay, open the doors, and Scotty's like, I'm trying. And you know, they're watching as the Enterprise is getting closer to the doors, and they're not opening. And then finally, at the last second, they open. And then you see them all collectively holding their breath because they're not sure if the Enterprise is going to clear the doors or if it's going to smash into them. And they just make it. And they manage to escape. And it's such an awesome scene. You know, essentially, Kirk and the crew are throwing their careers away. Like, they're disobeying Starfleet. They're stealing the Enterprise, and they know they have to do this in order to save their friends, and by doing so, they basically are now fugitives. They are throwing their careers away, and it was such a powerful scene, and I don't want to reveal too much, but it's easily one of my favorite moments from the original Star Trek films. And it's one, you know, every so often, like, I watch it on YouTube. I just, because they have, an HD version on YouTube for that scene. And every once in a while, I will go back and rewatch that. But, okay. Kevin, your honorable mention, sir.
It's funny how we got the comics going, even though none of us were planning on it. Well, some was, but, you know, you and I weren't planning on it. I want to throw in the Thunderbolts reveal.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
And could not do it today. Internet, everyone getting previews. Like,
yep.
I believe me, I love it when, you know, a company will randomly say, like, hey, we like your blog. Do you want this issue, like, a month in advance? Yeah, of course I do.
Yep.
It, not that it's every day, but, you know, when it does happen. But everyone, you know, between all the bloggers and sites and everything, eventually they're all out there to be spoiled. You know, someone's going to trip up and say something they shouldn't. But no one knew that Thunderbolts thing was coming. No one. And I really, like, there's so many rumors about what's coming next for Marvel. And Masters of Evil is a big rumor, and they want to do Thunderbolts eventually. And you start looking at who's in some of the movies now, and the Disney Plus show is coming up, and it's like, huh, they might be going there. You, like us fans, us longtime comic readers, are going to know what it is. If they ever see Thunderbolts, we know what's coming. But I'm really like, could they trick the rest of the world? Like, could you pull it off in the movie? And I don't know. Because just sales alone, we know that not everyone going to Marvel movies also going into the comic shop.
Yep.
Like, we know that.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of people are like, I don't want to know all the deep comic stuff. I just want to go and watch a two-hour movie, and that's it. But if you could pull that off on screen, it would, I mean, break the internet moment, you know? But that was such a cool comic thing. And then, oh, look. Now we got a concept that led to, what, about 100 issues of a great series?
Mm-hmm.
And just the concept of it, and they can keep bringing that concept back every time, too. And then, to keep it within Marvel, you mentioned Endgame, but I'm going to see the first Avengers movie when the original team is standing there in New York and the camera does the 360 around them. As they're all just, you know, gearing up for battle. Like, yeah, we had the movies. Yeah, we had the setup of getting the team together. We had, you know, Loki destroy the Helicarrier. We had so, you know, so much already. But that scene is such a epitome of putting the comic page right up there on screen.
Yeah.
And we never thought we'd see it.
Yeah.
Like, just to go back to, like, when most of us started online in whatever shape or form, never, ever, ever did we think we'd see the Avengers on screen. And that good, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, I remember watching, you know, hey, here's the whole TV movie, and they're going to introduce new Marvel heroes. I'm like, oh my God, finally. And it's, you know, Ninja Daredevil and not Thor. And they're fun for what they were, but overall they're disappointing. So yes. That Avengers moment, I was just like, I'm a kid. I'm a kid, and this is happening, and it's real, and it's on screen, and I'm in.
Yep.
Whatever movie you're giving me for the rest of my life, I'm here. You got me.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Well, did you guys have any more that you wanted to throw out there before we move on to our next segment?
I just had a couple I wanted to throw out. I wanted to mention... the She-Ra Princesses of Power, the new cartoon on, or the new animated series on Netflix. I was very surprised by the use of Mera from New Adventures of He-Man, to have her kind of factored into the She-Ra lore was kind of a nice positive, you know, like, oh my gosh, I was not expecting
Wait. Okay, so I'm not... All right, the last episode I saw, because just, you know, life, was when Double Trouble shows up.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the current season. There's, I don't know, 6, 8 episodes, whatever. But yeah. Mara showed up at the climax of the previous season.
Yeah, yeah. She was introduced a while ago. Yeah.
She's from New Adventures?
Yeah, there was a character in the old 90s cartoon named Mara. And, I mean, I don't know exactly. I don't think that there's a total, like, it's the same character. But it's the same name and the same look.
But inspired by, at least.
Yeah. And so just to kind of to see that nod and just sort of the love for that whole universe just kind of, you know, showing up here and there throughout the new series has just been a very positive, like, oh my gosh, this is so much fun to see this kind of stuff.
So you are loving the new series, Miss M?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Excellent.
I do. Excellent. I think it's really fun.
And I apologize. I totally forgot that you hadn't done your honorable mentions yet. So I apologize.
Oh, no. It's okay. Oh, no. You don't know. It's totally fine. I'm going to rattle them off really quickly because, I mean, they're just kind of like little tidbits. I know the other ones that I wanted to mention was Jim and the Holograms having a comic book series. That was something that I never would have ever have expected. And when it was announced that they were going to do that, it was just one of those like super excited, very positive moments for me with pop culture. Another one is the Masters of the Universe Classics toy line. I never thought we would have gotten highly detailed, articulated, amazingly made action figures designed by the Four Horsemen and you know, brought out by Mattel. Collecting the toy line was a bit of a rocky road, but just the overall impact of that line was a very positive moment. And then finally, kind of bringing it back to Marvel, Captain Marvel, which I didn't really think that I would really think of this as a positive moment, but it really surprised me in a positive way, which was their use of the Skrull characters. I was really thinking like, oh, the Skrull are going to be in Captain Marvel, they're going to be the villains, and to kind of see that they were, you know, part of the good guys in that movie was a very positive. Like, I was just, it totally caught me off guard in a positive way. So, that is my lightning round.
Excellent. Like the Skrull thing. Like, and I know there's a lot of people that were complaining about that, but they're not representative of the entire Skrull race. You know, like I still think we're going to see a Secret Invasion movie.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Because I know a lot of people were like, well, if they're good people now, or good guys now, then they're not going to do Secret Invasion. It's like, that's just a small number of an entire race of people.
Yeah.
You know, like it...
It's the problem of oversimplifying sci-fi. Like, they all have to act this way. A whole planet full of Skrulls have to all act the same. No, that's foolish. Not all humans act the same. Yeah. But you also have Star Wars with this is the ice planet, and this is the forest planet, and this volcano planet. It's like, dude, we can have all those on the same planet, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we have all those on our planet right now.
Yeah, right. Well, and that was what was so beautiful about it, was because I think people were really expecting, like, oh, we're going to finally see, you know, this is going to all lead up to, you know, the next phase, and the Skrull is going to be the, you know, the villain and all this stuff. And so to see them kind of go in a direction that, you know, was different and refreshing, I was just like, oh, this is awesome. This is yet another reason why I really am having fun watching this movie, you know, so.
Yep. Yeah, it was great. But, all right, well, without further ado, let's move on to our Enders segment. All right, so for Enders, we discuss more current topics. So I got a few things I want to throw out there, and then if Kev and Miss M, if you have anything that you want to throw out there, by all means. So since the last time we did an episode, Kevin and I, They have done, they've released, two further episodes of Star Trek Picard, episode 2 and 3. Miss M, are you watching Picard at all, or?
I'm not. My friends are, and I need to borrow their CBS All Access to start watching it or watch it with them, because I mean, it looks like a phenomenal show. So talking about it, I'm not going to worry if anything is, you know, mentioned or spoiled or whatever. It's not, you know, I will be totally fine with that.
Okay. I'm enjoying it. I really like what they're doing with this series. I'm not the biggest, I don't know if you know this, Miss Emma, or not, I'm not the biggest fan of Star Trek Discovery. Whereas some of the creative choices they've made with Star Trek Discovery, I don't really agree with. But Star Trek Picard, I'm really liking what they're doing. You know, with the second and third episodes, I gotta say I love the new Starfleet uniforms. I'm not sure who designed them, but basically they're almost like an amalgamation of the TNG uniform and the Deep Space Nine uniform.
Nice.
Yeah, I really like them. I like the fact that, you know, it's these little simple things that they've done, like bringing back the rank of Commodore to Star Trek, I think is awesome. In the original series, you know, you didn't really see a lot of admirals in the original series. You saw more Commodores. And then it seemed like when the original series went to the movies, and then with TNG, it was always admirals. You never saw any Commodores. So I really think it's cool that they brought that rank back for Star Trek Picard. In the most recent episode, I really like the captain of the ship that Picard has hired. I can't remember his name. Captain Rios, I want to say his name is. I really like that actor. I didn't think I would like this character, because he's essentially like a Han Solo type of character. But I love that his co-pilot is an emergency hologram, an EMH, emergency holographic program. He uses himself as a template. So he's talking to himself in various scenes, because he's in the emergency medical holographic program, which is also a mechanic, emergency mechanic and stuff. Looks like him. But he's a very different personality to the real Captain Rios. So, you know, there's one scene where they're going back and forth talking to each other, and the acting is so good. I almost forgot that that's the same guy. Like, it's literally the same actor acting against himself. But he's done such a good job playing two different characters that you forget that they're the same person. It's very, very reminiscent of Orphan Black. Like, when Tatiana Musolani, you know, she played all the different clones. And there were several scenes where she's acting with herself. And you forget that that's not two different people. That's the same person playing two different characters. But she did such an amazing job that you kind of forget that when you're watching it. And that's kind of how I got with Captain Rios. Like, he's the hologram version of himself is very different from the real version. And I really like their interaction back and forth. I really like the mystery that's unfolding here. Like, you know, these twins that may or may not be the biological daughters of Data. Like, what's going on here? Like, how is that even possible? And then I got thinking, is it tie back into, you know, like you said, Miss M, you watch the Next Generation films. In First Contact, you know, it's implied that there may have been a little, you know, hanky-panky between Data and the Borg Queen. I'm wondering, is that where these twins came from? Are they the actual, the daughters of the Queen and Data, maybe? Because in that film, you know, the Queen is, like, giving Data real skin and stuff, right?
Yeah.
maybe she gave him some other real stuff that we didn't see. You know what I mean? These twins. The twins at the center of this mystery on Star Trek Picard may be the daughters of Data, right? And they may be like a biological, for lack of a better description, a biological android. Not much different than like they say the Cylons on the new Battlestar Galactica, like the 2000s mm-hmm. Battlestar Galactica. So that whole mystery's unfolding. How's that, and how does it tie into the Borg? And I'm thinking that's how it does, because they have already made references to First Contact, and they've made references to Star Trek Nemesis. And, of course, the Romulans are involved, and there's a plot there. An even secreter organization of Romulans that goes beyond the Tal Shiar, and they're called the Vash... Vash something. They're operating on Earth. They're trying to get at these twins, and I'm just enthralled in the mystery, and I'm really wanting to see where it's going. Like they've done a really good job with this show. I'm very impressed. Kevin, did you watch episode 2 and 3, and what are your thoughts?
I have not been able to watch it. Episode 1, when we discussed it previously, Pluto TV app actually did it for free for a weekend.
Oh, okay. Just
continuously replayed it.
Nice.
So I was able to do that, but it was just, it was a glorified CBS All Access ad, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept hoping they'd do something again, but they are not going to.
See, and
I was like, come on, play it again. I'll watch. Nope. All right.
You see, the irony of all of this is typically when...
Why is it not on regular TV?
Yeah, like you typically, the Americans, like you guys, get all this cool stuff for free and you get to see it first. And us Canadians have to wait. You know, like there's that force field that, you know, that they have up between our two countries. where we don't get to see the cool stuff, but now it's like the opposite, where it, like, I can watch it on TV. It's on our sci-fi channel up here for free. We don't have to buy CBS All Access because we're not allowed to have CBS All Access because we can't have nice things in Canada. But, but sometimes, like, now it's starting to work to our advantage a little bit.
Yeah. It sounds like it.
Well, and typically it was never like that.
Like, yeah.
Sorry, Kev,
go ahead. For four streaming. No, you're fine. I think we're paying for four streaming things right now and just can't do a fifth for just one show.
Oh, I hear you. Like, for me, I've got four streaming services right now. I got Amazon Prime. I've got what we call Crave TV up here, which is basically our version of Hulu. Netflix, and then Disney Plus. Like, it's crazy, but
yeah,
but you have to, because there's so much good content out there, unfortunately.
Yeah,
but anyway,
I'm trying to force myself to watch one thing every month, like one movie, one show, whatever, on each of them to make it worth it.
Yes. Disney Plus, after The Mandalorian, I haven't really been watching much.
I started the Imagineering documentary series, and that's actually really good on there. That's been fascinating so far.
But actually, that's a good segue. Did you guys see the trailer or trailers for the Marvel Disney Plus shows?
Yeah.
And what are your thoughts? To me, I'm so excited. I didn't realize this. Apparently, for the Disney Plus stuff, like for the first seasons of these shows, they put in $150 million to make these shows.
Yeah.
So these these are going to be good. Like, it's not going to be like, you know, no offense to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's a good show. But, there's definitely a jarring difference between, you know, seeing Nick Fury on the Avengers and then seeing him on the season one finale of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., right?
Yeah.
Whereas this, it looks like this could be a Captain America movie. Like, I'm so excited for all of it. Like, the Falcon Winter Soldier, I loved everything I've seen so far. You know, the WandaVision, I really didn't know what to expect. Like, when I heard, like, the premise that they're, you know, doing all these sitcom type of things with Wanda and the Vision, but seeing it, I was like, wow, I really want to see what's going on here. And how is it going to springboard into the next Doctor Strange movie? Because she's in it.
Yeah.
And it's called The Multiverse of Madness. So is Scarlet Witch creating the Multiverse of Madness?
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, the little bit of Loki, you know. Like, I love the little Easter eggs there that, you know, he appears to be a prisoner of the time. Oh, what the heck are they called? The time...
I had never heard of them before in my comic reading life.
Yeah, they're kind of a newer concept. Basically, like, it's Marvel's version of the Linear Men, where, you know, like, they go and basically police timelines, right? Which I'm cool with that. Like, I that's a neat idea. I was thrilled. I absolutely was blown away. I'm so excited. But what are your guys' thoughts on it?
WandaVision, I think, is out of the three, that's the one I think I'm most excited for. It just looks like it's going to be something very different than what we're used to seeing. And so I'm really, really psyched for that one, like, beyond.
Yeah, me too. And seeing the Vision again, like, you know, that was the only thing about Endgame where I was like, oh, I wish they would have brought the Vision into it.
Yeah.
But I understand, you know. Kev, what are your thoughts?
So, to go back to in the main show discussion, Thunderbolts, Masters of Evil.
Yeah.
With Falcon Winter Soldier, Baron Zemo is the main bad guy, and he has his purple mask.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You got Taskmaster and Black Widow. You got U.S. Agent, which I can't believe, in Falcon Winter Soldier. If you're not getting all these guys on screen and familiar for Thunderbolts, you're at least doing Dark Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Loki, I don't have a clue what the hell's going on Loki, but we got the most amount of time until we get there anyways.
Yeah.
I think the next Thanos, the next bad guy for the Marvel movie universe is Scarlet Witch.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to start on WandaVision, and it's going to continue in Doctor Strange 2.
Yeah.
They have the two cribs in a scene for WandaVision.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the West Coast.
Yes.
Oh, my God. And the West Coast Avengers destroys her.
Yeah.
With Vision and those children and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're even going to get No More Mutants on camera.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was House of M was such a huge event for comics that to not try to put it on screen would be criminal. I mean, it has to somehow translate into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It has to.
Like, what if she already did it?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. What if they show, like, oh my gosh, before, you know, you were in the Avengers, before this, you wiped the mutants off of Earth, that's why none of us remember it.
Yeah.
Now that you say, is maybe that's a backdoor way of retconning the X-Men movies and Deadpool and everything.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, the big rumor right now is that New Mutants is going to be Marvel Cinematic, that they added something to it, and it counts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, yesterday. Yeah, because I know who I messaged about it. Marvel and Sony dropped that they're releasing a Marvel Sony movie November 2021, and that's all they've said. Hmm. And it's not Spider-Man 3. So, like, are they going to redo Venom with it? There's been lots of rumors that they want to do Spider-Man Deadpool team-up movie because the comic is huge of the two of them together.
Yeah.
PG-13, maybe? I'm not quite sure. There's got to be some way to do it, but I don't know how. But I agree with you. I think WandaVision is the biggest one I'm looking forward to. I want to get that original limited series when they got married. I got to dig out my West Coast Avengers from my long boxes. Like, I think that they're going to make her snap.
Yeah.
Well, I think she's almost there already. Like, for like what Thanos put her through. Because we really didn't see much. Because, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why she got snapped away in Infinity War. Was because they didn't want her to have those 5 years. They wanted her, you know, to go disappear shortly after the Vision dies. So she's got, like, no time to grieve. And then you, when you see her in Endgame, you know, she's raging on Thanos, right?
Yeah.
And taking it to him, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they made her look pretty strong.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, he was definitely done. Like, if he hadn't, you know, got his ship to fire on them all, like, he was done. Like, she had him. But, yeah, like, I think that was one of the reasons why. Like, she never really had time to grieve. And, you know, and I think maybe that's one of the reasons why, like, because I always thought, like, watching Endgame, like, you'd think somebody would have, you know, like, rewired Vision, you know, like, I was half expecting to see, like, the emotionless, color, or, like, the white version of the Vision in Endgame.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was expecting, because, like, when Thanos ripped the stone out, like, he turned all gray, right? So I thought that was going to be what we would see, was, like, an emotionless, you know, unfeeling Vision, right? Which I still think, well, now that, like, one of the reasons I think maybe they didn't do it, and obviously they didn't, was because all the geniuses got snapped away, right? With the exception of Tony. So, mm-hmm. you know, Sheree, you know, like, maybe in WandaVision we'll see, you know, her bringing him back in that way, like, where he's, like, emotionless or whatever, and then Wanda takes
him away. She was the one removing the stone from him, so mm-hmm. she would have familiar. Yeah, it's not a bad idea.
She's the one that, like, knew how to do it too, like, how to safely take out the stone. She just didn't have the time, right? Unfortunately. So, yeah. Well, yeah. I'm very, very interested to see what's going to go down. All right. Well, since our last episode, I went and purchased through iTunes, Jay and Silent Bob Reboot. It's the sequel of Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. It's, you know, the newest Kevin Smith movie. I liked it. It was good. I'd give it 3 out of 5 stars. Some of the notes I have, it definitely, like, if you're a Kevin Smith fan, it definitely pays a lot of fan service to the fans of his View Askew movies. Cameos galore in this film, of course. You know, it was mm-hmm. It was nice to see see Ben Affleck back in a Kevin Smith movie, even if it was just for, you know, one quick scene. And I don't know, he's like, he really phoned it in. Like, he really, like, I don't know, he just didn't seem to be there. Not, you know, like, when he was in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, like, I loved the scenes he was in, but this one, he...
They were better friends then, too.
Yeah, like, you could tell, like, he's... Yeah. Anyway...
They made up, finally, post-heart attack.
Yes, they did. And, yeah, so this was after Batman, and I mean, they had a few good good little jabs at Ben Affleck, you know, being Batman. But yeah, like the, you know, we were talking, I think it was last episode, about Comic Book Men, about how it was canceled. And in this film, you actually see the Comic Book Men cancellation panel at ChronicCon, which is the Jay and Silent Bob convention in the movie. You know, in this film, Kevin Smith also plays himself, which he hasn't done yet in a movie. So you actually see Kevin Smith, the director, while you also see him as Silent Bob. And he pokes a lot of fun at himself. He kind of makes himself look like a schmuck, which, you know, I appreciate. I like that kind of sense of humor. I'm looking forward to Mallrats 2, and I keep hearing rumblings that they're doing a Clerks 3, so we'll see how that goes. But yeah, if you like Kevin Smith movies, if you like his View Askew movies, you will like this film. Is it the best? No, but it's not bad. It's good. So yeah, I give it a solid 3 out of 5. All right.
Our queue for this weekend. I was told I cannot watch it on my own.
Oh.
So we have to watch it together.
Oh, your wife's a fan?
So both of us are. It was actually like one of the big things. She wasn't there. So we went to the same college. We didn't date then. We were with other people then and then reconnected later.
Okay.
But I was in a English class on religion and literature, and I was talking to my teacher about dogma. And I said, oh, you could do this, you could do that, and all. And she says, okay, and writes my name down on the syllabus. Because this is like, you know, the semester beforehand. This is like the teacher for my life. So she writes my name down. I said, why are you writing my name down? Like, you want to remember to call me or something? She's like, oh, no, you're teaching this. Oh. Excuse me? She goes, you already know more about this movie and how it ties in than I ever will. So just teach it. Like, you gotta be kidding me. So somehow, like, my knowledge for Kevin Smith stuff came out then. And then when my wife and I got together, we went through, like, the graphic novels that he wrote and the books he wrote and the Evening with Kevin Smith stand-up specials. Like, just marathons of stuff. But because we live in overall small town, like, none of his theater stuff comes here. So we're stuck waiting till DVD. I would have loved to have gone to the tour for this movie, but I think the closest was New York City for me, and that's like 5 hours.
Really?
So, huh. Yeah.
They actually had one not too long ago, like just like a couple hours, like in Edmonton, near a city I live in, or I live by. I want to say it was like December. But I couldn't go, unfortunately. It always seems like when Kevin Smith is around, I'm always working or something. Like, I can never take it off.
Well, I'll clarify. They did actually do one about an hour away, but it wasn't one he was there for.
Oh, okay.
It was like some simulcast thing. I'm like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a pretty busy guy.
But yeah, so ridiculously so. One of his books is what the heck's it called? Silent Bob Speaks. And it's a collection of he used to have like a live journal blog that he would do every day, and so much of it pissed me off. Like, I'll see the first 100-200 pages, I'm like, I work hard, I do a lot, and I look up to this guy, and I'm just getting page after page, day after day of, I got up and I waved to my kid as she went to school, and I got high and I took a dump and I watched a movie and I went to bed. I was like, awesome. Great. I've been busting my ass and I'm trying to be, you know, a good husband, a good father, and do this and that. Like, I was like jealous, mad at him.
Yeah.
And then it gets to the points of like, he's finally making a movie and all this stuff that goes. He's finally writing and all that goes. Oh, hey, Jason Mewes almost died and stole a bunch of stuff from me because his heroin addiction so bad. Here's the next 2 years of my life trying to save my best friend. I'm like, okay, now we're into something.
Yeah.
But it took the buildup of nothing to get there. So yeah, we, now, Chris, I'm pretty sure that I should make sure my kid's in bed before we watch this movie, though. Would that be correct?
Yes. Yes, you definitely don't want to watch it with the little ones around. Like, to be honest with you, like, my youngest daughter is 13, and I'd be sure she wasn't around. Because, yeah, obviously there's a lot of drug references, a lot of profanity. I can't remember if there's nudity, to be honest with you, but definitely a lot of profanity.
Rarely is for his movies.
Yeah, like, I don't think so. But yeah, definitely. Actually, to be honest, with the profanity and stuff, actually wasn't as bad as it has been on other movies. I definitely recommend it. It's good. All right. Well, before we get to that, where can we find the internet? I have a question I want to pose to each of you. And my question is, what are you watching lately? So, you know, what TV shows have you been watching? What movie have you watched lately? What are you watching lately? And Kev, we'll start with you. What have you been watching lately?
Right, so I'm trying to be caught up on certain things, which I decided to focus on some YouTube stuff first.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a list going of, okay, I want to do this show next, then this show next, then this show, and just try to focus. Because what kills me, and I'm so guilty of it, is I'll turn on a Roku, and I'll spend 20 minutes figuring out what I want to watch. And now I'm tired.
Yeah.
And I just go to bed. And all I've done is looked at, pictures and apps and stuff, and I actually watched something. I was like, if I had this planned out beforehand, I could have at least gotten through like a half hour show.
Yeah.
I am up to date on two of my favorite YouTube shows. I like the Attic Dwellers a lot. Two guys about our age, Chris, that just hang out in their attic and dig out cool stuff that they got in storage or bring something in there. Last Monday's episode was they just went through a bunch of Dungeons and Dragons stuff for the heck of it.
Cool.
So they're always fun.
What are they called again? Attic Dwellers?
The Attic Dwellers.
Okay. Writing that down.
So they're fun. Yep. And then it's the 13th year, and I've been there almost from the beginning, I think, of From the Attic to the Basement. Pete's Basement is a comic show out of Brooklyn. And it's a bunch of guys that turned out they all shopped at the same comic shop. So they record in Pete's Basement in Brooklyn and go through the week of comics. And they drink the whole time too, though. So by the end of the episode, it gets foul. It gets ridiculous, but it's so funny. And because they're in New York City, they constantly have comic people coming by to hang out with them. Or they also have guys that are like, hey, I work in production. Here's what's up. This isn't announced till next month, but I can tell you right now. So you get all sorts of news that you really shouldn't know yet. That's been fun. I've been wanting to rewatch it for years, and it's never on streaming, but I sat down this week and I watched Heavy Metal. The cool cartoon movie based on the sci-fi magazine. My gosh. It's terrible and it's wonderful at the same time, depending on what you're looking for. Like, there's parts where I'm like, this is garbage. This is, your budget got cut. You didn't have what you wanted. There's stuff that just doesn't hold up. I'm like, just to be a quote woke, as the kids say, individual, there's a lot wrong here. But when you treat it for what it is, I'm like, this movie's fantastic. So much fun. I mean, heavy metal, like the comic magazine is not one that's in my, there might be like one or two buried in my collection. It's not one I really got into.
Yeah.
But the older I get, the more I have a respect for it. And I think I want to like start deep diving a little more on it.
I hear you. Like, for me, it's the old magazine style Conan books. Like, you know, Savage Sword.
The black and white.
Yes. Like at the time, like it was always something I took for granted, right? It was always there on the magazine shelf. Occasionally I'd pick one up. I'd get my Conan fixed and I'd be good for a while. But now that it's not there anymore, I find I miss it. It's like I would totally buy that every month if it was on the magazine rack.
And I don't want to say adult comics because that implies certain other things, but that's what it was though.
Yep.
Both of them. And I mean, as a kid, it wasn't for me either, but I also think I didn't understand what's going for. I wanted my superheroes. I wanted my tights and fights, you know, and that's not what any of those are.
Yep.
And the problem is, and you know, I see it from people that aren't fans. So many of us go into comics with comics are all one thing, and it's not. That's like saying all books are one thing, or all movies are one thing, or all TV.
Yep.
Comics is just the method for delivering your story, and the story could be anything. I think previously when I checked out, you know, heavy metal and Conan and stuff like that, I was looking for Stan Lee Marvel. That's not what it is, and it never said it was either. So now as an adult, because I was an adult in my 20s, but you know, you both know what I mean.
Yes.
Not trying to seem, you know, mature and educated here. I want that stuff. If I was at like a garage sale or thrift shop and found a bunch of those, I'm getting the whole stack. Yeah. Like, I really want to explore these.
Yep. I know the next convention I go to, I'm looking for the old Conan magazines for sure. But I just wanted to throw this out there. Like, you mentioned this movie, and that it's from our childhood. That is a future topic we are going to be discussing. It's something I had in mind before, and that's childhood movies that have or have not aged well. The reason what got me thinking about this, and I shared a clip recently from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 1990 film. And I still love that movie. It, to me, it's actually aged very well. Like, it's, in my opinion, my humble opinion, I still think it's the greatest Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie ever made. And it's, you know, 30 years old now. So that is a topic we will be discussing in the not too distant future. So Miss M, what are you watching lately?
So in terms of television, I am, you know, I mean, I love my 80s primetime soaps. So the Dynasty reboot is on my my TV watching list. It is an interesting take on Dynasty. It definitely has like a nod and a wink to the original series, but also kind of even amps the campiness up just even a little crazier for this day and age. So I'm watching that, trying to finish, or well, the whole season, the final season hasn't totally come out yet, but the final season of Schitt's Creek, I'm getting through that and just loving sort of the humor in it. And then I went this past weekend to see Birds of Prey and absolutely loved it. And I know it's one of those movies that I can see from online as sort of divided people, like people either really like it or they really hate it. But I had so much fun watching it. I will probably go and see it again in the theater because it was just a lot of fun. It was a really fun time in the movie theater.
That's awesome. I'm glad to hear that because I'm going to be taking my daughter this weekend. It's actually coming to our local theater, so I don't have to go far to watch it. And I've heard good things about it from other people. Like, I know Margot Robbie, like, her, you know, she was born to play Harley Quinn. Like, in the same way, like, Ryan Reynolds is born to play Deadpool, you know, what's his name? Chris Evans was born to be Cap. Margot Robbie. Like, she's just amazing in that role.
And she's, there's, the character is such a chaotic character, and the way that the story unfolds is a little chaotic, but in a good way. Like, it's not like, you know, these people did not know what they were writing or coming up with. I mean, it's all done very well, and the storyline is just a great, like, it's just a great ride. I mean, it's an amusement ride. I mean, it really is, and it's fantastic. So yeah, I loved it.
So it seems like everyone that saw Harley Quinn and Birds of Prey, which apparently it's getting a name change officially.
Yeah.
Everyone that went and saw it that's not like some comic skater asshole has loved it.
Yeah.
But everyone that's on that side of it is coming out and they're... Yeah, I was trying to think what language I could use here, and I'm thinking what words Chris has said before. So there was some, you know, one of those guys that said the movie's going to bomb because none of the girls look fuckable.
Yeah.
Really?
And I was like, oh yeah. And I'm like, that's not who's going to see this.
Yeah.
Harley, I don't know when, I don't know how, and sometimes it's for good or bad, is an icon to women.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Across the board. And no, maybe it's not going to make $1 billion like Joker or Endgame, but it's going to make a lot, and it's going to make a fortune on DVD, and it's going to make a fortune in merchandise, because Harley is everything. Harley is the gateway character for comics right now.
Yeah. And I see it being one of those movies that, you know, if it, I mean, cause I don't, it's not going to make the kind of money that like the Joker made, but I do think that it's going to be one of those movies that's going to carry and pick up steam, and that when it is released on DVD and Blu-ray, it's going to, you know, the audience that didn't see it in the theater is going to end up seeing it that way. And it's going to, I think it's going to really stand amongst some really great comic book films, because it was just, I can't even explain it. I mean, it was just really, really wonderful. It was great seeing an all women superhero team. I mean, I know I use the term superhero a little lightly, but, or loosely, yeah. But just seeing a bunch of women like band together and kick butt, I mean, it was one of those things, like, I haven't, you know, we don't really, this is a rarity. Like, you don't see this that often, and it was done so well. And I could go on and on about how much I enjoyed this movie. And I think maybe the other thing about why I enjoyed it so much is that I'm not tied to these characters the way that certain comic book fans are, you know, where it has to be done, you know, you're going to do Birds of Prey, it has to be done this way. Like, I'm not married to some of those ideas. So I was very receptive to what they did with this movie, you know?
Well, it sounds like the movie's very Amanda Conner, Jimmy Palmiotti's Harley Quinn.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which is good to know. And from your description, and I'm hoping this example works for both of you, from your description, it sounds like this movie is everything that we thought Sucker Punch was going to be until we actually saw it.
Okay. Yes. Yes. This is what Sucker Punch should have been. Yes. I would say, okay. I would go on a limb and say that, because that movie really, if we talk about negative OMG moments, Sucker Punch would have a negative moment for me, because it was that there was a shift in that movie that made it very hard for me to want to still stay in the movie theater. I'll be very honest about that.
Movie. my wife and I watched it, and we were looking forward to it too. So by the time we got, you know, could finally sit down and watch it, we were just so upset. And she turns and she goes, "Movie pretty."
Yeah. Right.
It's like, right. It was pretty.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad to hear that, Miss M. I'm looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to seeing Ewan McGregor, you know, chew up the scenery with as Black Mask.
The fun that man must have had making that, like, I have never seen him as such a just insane, delightful mess. He's having the time of his life. You could just see it through the screen. He's having just I don't know him personally, but like it just looks like he's having the best time up there on that screen.
Excellent. So for me, what I'm watching lately is I've been catching up on Curb Your Enthusiasm, the Larry David HBO series. I'd never actually watched it before. It was actually when I was watching Watchmen back in December. I would turn it to HBO, and they would be airing Curb Your Enthusiasm prior to the new episodes of Watchmen. And so I would watch, I don't know, the last 10 or 15 minutes of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and I was actually kind of laughing at it. I was like, wow, this, I'd never watched it before. So I've since went back, and I'm kind of watching it in a weird order. So I watched, because there's a new season out right now that just started a few weeks ago. So I've been watching that. And then I kind of went back, and I've been going back, season by season. So I watched, because it's currently season 10, so I went and watched season 9, and then watched season 8, then I watched season 7, and now I'm back to season 3. So I still gotta finish season 3, and then I gotta watch 2 and 1. But one of the neat things that I find with this show is the longevity. This show has literally been on the air for 20 years. But it, and I remember that because I remember back when I used to watch The Sopranos in the early 2000s, I remember Curb Your Enthusiasm being on when that show was on the air. And I remember they actually did an episode of The Sopranos where you actually saw them watching Curb Your Enthusiasm at Uncle Junior's house. And then I got thinking, how can it still be on the air? But I guess they go years and years without doing a season, and then it's basically whenever Larry David decides, okay, well, I'm ready to do another season, so they go and do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a cool way of doing television. They're on season 10 right now, and they've been doing this for 20 years, which is crazy. Going back and it's kind of neat how I'm watching it, because each season I'm going back, they're getting younger and younger. So it's kind of neat to see that. And I love the season, I think it was season 7 when they did the Seinfeld reunion. So it's it was a way of them coming back and doing Seinfeld without actually doing Seinfeld. And it's been great. I'm really enjoying Curb Your Enthusiasm. All right, well, now let's move on to that little segment of where can we find you on the internet? We'll start with our guest, Miss M. Miss M, where can we find you on the internet?
So you can find me on my blog at diaryofadorkette.blogspot.com. You can also find me on Instagram at diaryofadorkette. And I'm also, I tweet every now and then. I'll have these bursts of tweeting a lot, and then I'll kind of not tweet so much. But I'm on Twitter at Dorkette Tweets, or you can also search through Diary of a Dorkette on Twitter as well.
Excellent. Kevin, where can we find you, sir?
You can find me, and I have not changed it in a couple of weeks now, Chris, so I think I'm good.
Excellent.
Now.
Excellent.
You can find me and my postings at mastlibrary.com. And that is the new Facebook page, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, Tinder, all that stuff.
Excellent. And as for myself, you can check out my blog at www.randomnerdness.blogspot.com. I'm also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at ChrisLock1701. Be sure to check out the Pop Culture Pub podcast group on Facebook. Send a request to join, and I'm sure I'll approve it. We focus on positive pop culture news and discussions. Last group count was we are at 194 members. So it's growing slowly, but it is growing. I'm also the admin at the Incredible Fans of the Incredible Hulk. It's a group on Facebook. The last group count for that group was 1,038 members. So yeah, again, it's also growing. So on behalf of Miss M, Kevin Decent, and myself, Chris Lockhart, I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. This was our top positive OMG moments in pop culture, and our top negative OMG moments in pop culture will be on our next episode. And I'm also doing an episode with Larry Nemechek. I'm still waiting to hear from him, so we're going to be doing a more Star Trek themed episode with him, hopefully in the next month or two. So be on the lookout for that. So again, thank you for taking the time to listen to us, and we will see you again in the not-too-distant future. Bye.
Bye.